And we're holding on Zion on the Bay's about the middle of the wide lines. We learned yesterday that Nochum Amodi, a Tana, disagrees with what we learned in the last two Mishnayos about not doing business with Goyim 3 days before their Chogah, and he said appointed Rabbi Shmuel even 3 days after, and we said Nochum Amodi disagrees with that and says it's also only 1 day before. So the Chacham told him, Nishtaka Hadrava V'lei Ne'emar, such a thing should be sunk in and not said, meaning, as Rashi said, either, as Rashi said, two explanations, either it means nobody ever said that thing, there's no basis for this, or saying that this should not go outside, meaning, fine, you want to say such a thing in the Beis Medrash, then fine, but nobody else should be saying it, nobody else should be thinking to follow this. And then the Gemara had gone on to mention several other halachas that Nochum Amodi said, and each one of them, the other chachamim, reacted, Nishtaka, Dovah V'lei Ne'emar, there's no other opinion that holds that, and there's really no basis for it. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Acha bar Manyumi La Abaya. So Rav Acha bar, so you have like, we had a whole bunch of things. We had this thing about the Goyish Chogas, we had another thing about a din about selling Goyim of certain kinds of horses, we had a din about taking Meiser from Sheves, from Aniseed, and each one of them, the Chum told them, the Shtaka Dovah V'lei Ne'emar. So Amalei Rav Acha bar Manyumi La Abaya. What's going on over here? Gabri Rabba Osame Astrian, a great person came from our area. Nochum Amodi is a Tana after all. He's a great Talmud Chacham. And he came from our place, from Modai. Apparently Rabbi Acha bar Manyumi himself was from there as well. And every single thing he's saying, the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael are dismissing and saying the Shtaka Adov of Leinemer. He wants to stand up for his countrymen. I talking that every time we're dismissing Nochum Amodi like that. Omar, Rabbi answers him, don't worry, you know something, I'll tell you, we do find one halacha where we actually do things where the halacha is like Nochum Amodi, and we do actually do like him. Now you do have other halachas that he says here and there in Shas, but there it doesn't clearly say one way or the other whether the halacha is like him. But Abai tells him, I'll tell you a clear thing where we see the halacha is like him. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Nochum Amodi Oyma Shoyal Odom Tzorach B'Shamei Atfila. A person is allowed to ask for whatever it is he needs from Hashem in the bracha of Shamei Atfila. So there you go. Then you have one thing in which we do hold like him. So don't feel bad that your countryman has been contradicted by the Chacham in other areas. Omar, but Rav Acha bar Manyumi says that's not really much. That's not really much of a consolation prize. Barmi Nadahi, never mind that, meaning that doesn't really mean anything. The Talya ba'ashli ravervi. Because in fact, that depends on big ashli. Rashi says two explanations. Ashli in Aramaic means ropes. So it's hanging on great ropes, which is another word, orbs. So that's the first explanation. Or the second explanation is that ashli means trees, like vayita eshol bever shova. Either way, it means, in other words, that he's saying, you know what, there are greater chachamim who say that, and who say that, and we pass him like them. So it so happens that Nochum Amodi is saying the same thing, and therefore the halacha is like him, but Rav Acha says that really doesn't make me feel much better. If you show me halacha where we pass him like Nochum Amodi, where we don't have other great chachamim agreeing with him, then fine, then that would make me feel better. But over here, it's Talya Ba'ashli Ravravi, it depends on great ropes, or great trees, representing great Talmud Chachamim, where therefore, in other words, and that's why the halacha is like that. The Tanya, as we learn in Braitha, Rabbi Eliezer, Meshur Lodim Tzrachav, V'achatach Hispalel, Rabbi Eliezer holds that a person, if he needs particular individual things from Hashem, then he should daven first, he should ask for those first, V'achatach Hispalel, and then daven Shemana Esrei, but not ask them in the middle of Shemana, not say Shemana Esrei, and then ask for his needs, and not ask for them in the middle of Shemana Esrei, says Rabbi Eliezer. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, tefillah la'on kiyata, for tefillah by the poor person when he's feeling faint, v'lefnei Hashem yishbech sichai, and he pours out his speech in front of Hashem, v'ein sichai ala tefillah, and the word sicha refers to davening, shenemar, v'yetze Yitzchak, v'asuach basada, as the Pasuk says that Yitzchak went out to speak in the field in the evening, which was that he went to daven mincha. So in other words, therefore, we understand that first there should be a tefillah la'ani, that first he asks, the first ki yata, if Rashi explains that he's worried and concerned, and he should daven about that first, and then, and then he'll pour out his tefillah of sichoy, of ayetze yitzuch, l'sroch masada, before Hashem. Tosfos points out that elsewhere the Gemara actually says that the in and of itself is not a proof that it means tefillah. We have a different pasuk eshbech l'fon of sichi, and Tosfos explains that we need the combination of the two psukim to establish that it means that that sicha means tefillah, and that it means that it's to be davened at a fixed time. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Eliezer says, based on that pasuk, then, so you see, you're not supposed to be asking Hashem for your needs in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei or after that, but rather before it. The Ravid actually argues that if it's me'ena osa bracha, if it is something related to the bracha, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that that you're allowed to add it in the middle. But here he's talking about if it's not directly related to the bracha, then he's saying that not. Rabbi Yeshua says no. Yispalal v'achachach yishal tzrachav. First daven, then ask for your needs. Shenema, because there are different pasuk. Eshbech l'fon of sichi. The pasuk says, I will pour out my sicha before Hashem. Where again, sicha, as we just said, means tefillah. Sarosi l'fon of agid. I will say, and I will tell over in front of Hashem my troubles. So we see sicha davening first, and then asking Hashem about his troubles. So they knew, okay, what does each one do with the other one's pasuk? Rabbi Eliezer nami haksiv eshbech l'fon of sichi. What does Rabbi Eliezer do with Rabbi Yeshua's pasuk? And the answer is, hachi kama, Rabbi Eliezer would say, that pasuk is telling us, eshbech l'fon of sichi, when am I davening to Hashem? Bizman shetzarosi l'fon of agid, when already previously I told Hashem about my troubles. So in other words, that still fits with how I'm saying, that davening for his troubles first, and then davening Shemoneh Esrei. Rabbi Yeshua nami hoksit tefillah on kiyatif. What about Rabbi Yeshua? What does he do with the pasuk about when the person is all wrapped up and worried, and then and only he does that, and only then he davens? And the answer is hachikama. Rabbi Yeshua would understand the pasuk. Emesai tefillah la'ani. When does the ani daven his tefillah? Bizman shelifnei Hashem yishbech sichay. When already previously he's poured out his. When is he tefillah, meaning the personal tefillah for what he needs, is when already previously the fnashem yishbech sichay, he's already poured out his heart in the sicha of Shemoneh Esrei. Well, the Gemara says, Mechdi, let's consider. The psukim really are not precise according to either one of them. Meaning, in other words, it's true. Each one has a pasuk to defend him, but the fact is, he also has to deal with the other pasuk, and he has to explain that it means out of order, etc. So they're obviously not really learning from the psukim. So you have to say that the basis of their machloikas is something else, and then once they have their respective opinions, then each of them is finding an appropriate pasuk to support him. So b'may kamitzagi, what is the real underlying machlokes? So the answer is k'dedoras Reb Simloi. The real underlying point is based on what Reb Simloi darshin. The doras Reb Simloi la'olam yisader onim shvachas shomokim va'achachet yispalal. A person should always first arrange and speak out the praise of Hashem, and only then ask for his needs, and then only then daven and ask for the rest of the brachas. And we have that in the structure of Shemoneh Esrei. The first three brachas, avos, mogen Avraham, and machaya. And after Kaddish, none of them have requests for Hashem. All of them are praising Hashem for the things he does. That he does chesed for us, and that he did for the un. Remembers the chesed of the others, and that Hashem is powerful and mechayeh meisim, etc. And that Hashem is holy. So all of those are shvachas shomokim, and only then are we davening Shemoneh Esrei. Only then are we davening the middle brachas where we're asking Hashem for our things. By the way, you know, we have during Aseret Simchat, of course we do. We add Zochreinu and Mikamoicha in those first three brachas. In the time of the Gaonim, when that minute was starting to develop, there was quite a bit of controversy about it because how does that fit with this idea of not asking for your tzrachim in those first three brachas? The final decision was that because they're not really request so much for yourself personally, but rather for the tzibur collectively. So therefore, it's not so bad. But anyway, Menolon says Rabbi Simloi, where do we learn that from? Min Moshe Rabbeinu. We see from the way Moshe Rabbeinu davened to Hashem at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshanan, when he's pleading with Hashem to let him go into Eretz Yisrael. So he says, Hashem Elikim, Dichtiv, Hashem Elikim, Ata Hachilois Laharis is Abdachav Gemer, you have begun to show your servant me your greatness and your mighty hand, and who is like you in heaven, and who's any power like you in heaven and earth, etc. That's Shrochim, that's praise of Hashem. Ochtiv Basra, and only then does Moshe say, Ebra, no, let me pass over the Eretz, the Eretz HaTorva, and let me see the good land. So we see that first he spoke of Hashem's praises, and then he started davening for what he actually needs. Marsha talks about over here that you have those three things he mentions. Earlier in Parshas Ekev, Moshe mentions Hagodol Agibah V'Anora, and we say that in Shemoneh Esrei, and therefore in the three things that he mentions over here, Godlacha, is it relates to Godol, Yodcha Chazaka refers to the Gvura, and Asher Yasech Ma'asecha V'Chigvura Secha refers to Hanora. So now he's saying, I saw all that in Mitzrayim, now let me get to see that in the conquest of Eretz Yisrael as well. And Moshe goes on to talk about what Hashem means by Rav Loch when he answers him. Anyway, whatever the point is, that we see from that you have to daven Hashem's praise and only then ask for what you need. Well, Rabbi Yeshua stuff, Yafin and Mimosha. Well, then Rabbi Yeshua learns, we have to learn from Moshe. So therefore, you have to mention the praises of Hashem first. And that means Shemoneh Esrei. So therefore, first you daven the whole Shemoneh Esrei, which begins with the praises for Hashem, and only then you're going to ask for your personal needs that are not directly related to Shemoneh Esrei. Rabbi Eliezer Sova, Layofen and Mimosha, Rabbi Eliezer holds that you can't learn from Moshe, Shiny Moshe de Rav Guvre, because Moshe is different, he has tremendous strength, he's a tremendous tzaddik, and therefore he has special ability to, so he can be adding more praises to Hashem, and therefore it's appropriate for him to praise Hashem and then ask for his needs. But for anybody else, says Rabbi Eliezer, it would be Mechzi Ki Yuara, it would look like he's acting like a big shot and then putting himself on the same level as Moshe. The Rashba points out that when it comes to Tfilas Tzibur, then Rabbi Eliezer would agree that we can learn from Moshe that Tzibur has tremendous koyach. But here we're talking about the Yochid, and therefore not. Again, Marsha says that's part of when Hashem answers him, Rav Loch, Hashem is answering him with this very phrase, you have tremendous chokhman, you have tremendous ability, therefore you have the ability to praise me and to ask me like that, but nobody else does, says Rabbi Eliezer. Anyway, so now, after those two opinions, v'chom say loy kedivrei zeh v'loy kedivrei zeh, the halacha is not like either one of them, ella, shoyel adam tzracha b'shamei tefillah. Rather, a person is allowed to ask for his needs, any need, in the bracha shamei tefillah. So that's what we were saying before, when Nochum Amodi says that, and we said then, and Rabbi pointed out, listen, the halacha is like him, so Rav Acha b'man yumi is not satisfied with that, and he says, that's all very nice, but the reason why the halacha is like Nochum Amodi is because there he happens to agree with the Chachamim. He says, I'd like to see a case where the halacha is like Nochum Amodi independent of that. And the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha, Shoyel Adam Tzrachav, V'Shemeya Tefillah. In fact, that is the Halacha. Like the Chachamim, a person is allowed to ask for whatever it is he needs from Hashem in the Bracha Shemeya Tefillah. This is in parenthesis, but they are not all the Rishonim are good at this. So it means, though, Tosfos does mention elsewhere that it means, for example, that when he has a need, when he has something, he has a relative who's sick or something like that, or he needs water for his field or whatever, so that's me'ein, that what we ask for in davening, so therefore that's appropriate in Shemeya Tefillah. But Tosfos points out that it still has to be a request from Hashem. So actually Tosfos learns that, let's say, for example, you forgot Atachon Antonu, you wouldn't be allowed to say it in Shemeya Tefillah, because Atachon Antonu is primarily a bracha thanking Hashem for dividing between weekdays and between Shabbos and weekdays, and therefore it's not really an appropriate thing for Shemeya Tefillah. Not all the Rishonim agree with that, and there are opinions that say that if you missed it, you could say it over there. Generally speaking, it wouldn't really be so negeya. You're going to make Abdullah anyhow, but sometimes that would be negeya. The Gemara continues, Amr of Yehuda Breder of Shmuel Bashilas Mishmei Derab, Afa Pisha Omru, Shoyel Adam Tzracha B'Shemei Tefillah, even though the Chacham have said that you can ask for your needs in Shemei Tefillah, that's true in Shemei Tefillah, but implying that in other brachas you can't. Avlim Bo Loimer B'Soif Kol Bracha O'Bracha, Me'ein Kol Bracha O'Bracha, however, in the other middle brachas, you would be allowed to add, at the end of the bracha, you would be allowed to add something Me'ein of that bracha. So say, for example, Rashi says a person is forgetful and he's not forgetting, he's not remembering his learning, then he can ask in the bracha Chonin Ados before he gets to Baruch Ata Hashem Chonin Ados, then he can ask Hashem, please help me give me a good memory to be able to remember what I'm learning. And the same thing with each other bracha, he can do that. If he's a Baal Teshuva, then he can add extra in the bracha Hashiveinu and so forth at the end of the bracha, not at the beginning. And also not in the first three and last three. So you could do that. And then if you have something that you didn't, if you didn't do something in, and if you didn't do something in the individual bracha, then instead you can do it in Shema Tefillah, or if it's something that doesn't really directly have to do with any of the other brachas. And the Gemara continues, Omer Rav Ashi Omer Rav, Alpha Pisha Omer Shema, here's another din, Alpha Pisha Omer Shoyal Adam Tzracha B'Shema Tefillah. Furthermore, even though we said that the Chachamim had said, and the Halacha is like them, that a person can ask for his needs in Shema Tefillah, Im Yesh Lechoyla B'Seich Beisoy, so then Rav Chiyah Ashi says, so if he has, for example, a person who in his house who's sick, Omer B'Birkas Cholim, then he can say something about it in the Bracha Roif Cholim, V'im Tzorech LaParnosa, and if he needs something as far as Parnosa, Omer Birkas Hashanim, then he can say something in the bracha, in the bracha Birkas Hashanim, in Baruch Aleinu. But in other words, he's saying that you should not be saying it in Shema Tefillah. You should be saying it Davka in those brachas. He would agree that Ivan says that if he forgot that there, then he could say it in Shema Tefillah. And the Gemara continues, we have to talk about, are these various opinions over here arguing with one another, or are they augmenting one another? We'll talk about in a second. Anyway, so Omer Rabbi Shur ben Levi, so Rabbi Shur ben Levi then furthermore says, even though we said that a person can ask for his needs in Shema Tefillah, but if he wants to at the end of davening, he gets to the end of the 19 brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, Hamavorach Hasam Yisrael Bashalom and Yulurotzen. After that comes, we say Elakain Etzer. The Gemara in Brachas mentions there were various Amiroyim who would say various other tefillas at that point. At that point, before you've taken the three steps back, if a person wants to say at that point, Afilu Kaseidu Yemek Kippurim, even if he wants to say a long vidui like you do on Yom Kippur, Omer, then you can say whatever you want. So in other words, the point is now that you've finished the main part of Shemoneh, the actual Shemoneh Esrei, before you've taken the three steps back, now you can add whatever you want, no matter how long it is. So you have, in other words, it comes out that you have several different statements over here. So Rabbeinu Yonah actually explains on the in Brachos on the Rif, Talmud Rabbeinu Yonah explained that actually there are a few different possibilities. You can do anything in Shema Tefillah at the end of the other Brachos. You can have things. He says at the end of any bracha you can add things. He learns only things that are tzorchit sibur, and it has to be said b'loshen rabbin. So in other words, he would say that no, if you have, for example, an individual sick person, Rabbeinu Yonah would say you could make say a general tefillah in Rafainu, for example, that Hashem should be roifi chole ame, that Hashem should heal all the sick people of the Jewish people, but not to say that Hashem should heal my relative. Let's say Rabbeinu Yonah learns that would be no good. In the middle of the bracha, then he could do Loshen Yochid, not Loshen Rabim, the other way around, because otherwise if he does it in Loshen Rabim, then Rabbeinu Yonah says Fakir, it makes it look like he's changing the structure of Shemoneh Esrei. Right? And then again, after the first year of the Ratzin, then before the Oyster Shalom, then as Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, he can say whatever he wants, no matter how long it is. The Beis Yosef discusses, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda Breider of Shmo Bashilas, who's saying that a person can say at the end of every bracha, me'ein ko bracha o bracha, and Rav Chiya Ba'ashi, who's saying that if a person has a sick person in his house, he can say in Rafa'enu, and if he needs parnosa, he can say in Shema Tefillah, Rabbeinu Yonah are learning that these are actually two different places in the bracha and two different types of things for the yochid versus for the tzibur. So Beis Yosef points out Rashi doesn't necessarily seem to make that distinction. The Rambam also doesn't. In the end, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that you should, if possible, you should follow Rabbeinu Yonah's guidelines. And therefore, when you're adding things in brachas and Shemoneh Esrei, then you have the distinction between the beginning, between the middle and the end of the bracha, whether you're adding things b'loshen yochid or b'loshen rabim. And again, you can add whatever you want in Shemoneh Tefillah, and you can add even more whatever you want, of no matter how lengthy it is, after the first year of the Ratzin. Tosfos points out in this connection as well, there's also a difference between things of the tzibur, which is why, for example, in their times, they would often add slichas and things in the middle of the bracha, slach lanu, and that would be fine, because that's tzorchei tzibur, for the same reason we don't ask for our needs, but we have on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and according to other menhagim, some other times during the year as well, we say special piyutim during the first brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, all because those are tzorchei tzibur. Mishnah continues. Now that we talked about that for 3 days, or according to Nochum Amadi, for 1 day before Goyish Shechaga, then you're not allowed to do certain kinds of business with the Goyim. So now let's talk about what's the list of the Chagas. So the following are the chagas of the goyim. Obviously, it's going to depend on time and place, but these were the ones that were celebrated by the goyim in the time when the Mishnah was composed. So these are going to be Roman or Greek or whatever holidays. Kalenda. Ustanura, the Gemara is going to define all these. Kalenda, Ustanura, Ukratesim, those three, the Gemara is going to explain what all those are. Also the day of Ginusia of their kings, the Gemara is going to discuss later on. Does that mean the king's birthday, or does it mean the Gemara is going to end up discussing that it means the day that the king was crowned? The Yom HaLeda, and the day that he was born, so then the Gemara is going to discuss. So now does Yom Genusia, so there's one possibility, Yom Genusia would be the day that the king was born, and Yom HaLeda would be the day that his son was born, his son and heir. The Gemara is going to discuss that later on, Daf Yud. The other possibility is Yom Genusia means the day that he was crowned, and then Yom HaLeda would be the day that he was born. Okay, so you have those, Yom HaMisa, and the day that the king died, the day that the king or the emperor died, and then during his successive times, they celebrate it as a holiday. Divrei Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir says, that the Yom Genusia and Yom HaLeda and Yom HaMisa are always considered a Dayim Shalom Kechavim, and therefore you always have to, then so obviously it's going to depend on the individual emperor, but the point is, in other words, when he was born and when he was crowned, etc. But the point is, in other words, Rabbi Meir is saying across the board that every emperor, you always have to know whatever they celebrate as his birthday and whatever they celebrate as, so to speak, as Yahrzeit, then you have to consider it a chaga, and you have these rules. The chum say it's not so simple. Kol misish yesh basreifa yesh ba'avodas mechavim. The rule will be that if by the king's funeral, if by the emperor's funeral, they burn his personal items like they customarily did for kings, then it means yesh ba'avodas mechavim. Then it means there is avodah zarah involved, because then it means, in other words, then they worship their getchkas on that day, and they make it one of their chagas. But if there's no burning, ain't ba'avodas mechavim, then the chum say there's no avodah zarah involved, and therefore that's not considered a chaga of theirs where these rules would apply. Rashi says that it means they burn his personal effects. The Rambam learns that it means, for example, they burn keturas or whatever in his honor. Continues the Mishnah. Abel Yom Tiglachas Zekonai. Now, for example, you have, let's say, the day that a goy shaves his beard. Every so often, he would grow out his beard, and then every so often, he would shave it and dedicate the hair to Avodah Zarah. So that kind of thing. Yom Tiglachas Zekonai Ublurus. The day that he shaves off his beard or his blurus, his chuk, his long lock of hair, which also they would leave in honor of their getchkas, and then like do a ceremonial cutting of it once a year or something. So that day also they would make a personal chaga. So that kind of thing. It could mean that they'd shave every so often. It could be, for example, let's say that the guy was in danger and vowed that he's going to now when he is out of that danger, he's going to shave his beard and dedicate it to his getchka or whatever. Anyway. So those kinds of things, Yom Sha'olavim in a Yam, or the day where a day, for example, when years before he had been in danger in a shipwreck, and then he came out of it safely. So now he makes that a personal chaga of his and brings korbanos to his genshka. Or if a goy is making a party in honor of his son's wedding. So all of those, Eina Oser, Ela Osa Yom, Va Osa Ish Bilvad. Then in those cases, we don't say the three, first of all, it doesn't apply across the board to other Goyim, it only applies to that individual person who's making that celebration, and with him it doesn't apply 3 days before, it's only on the day of his celebration you'd be Oser to do this kind of business with him. Rabbeinu Yerucham learns actually that the Yom Tiglacha, that the day, that some of these things might actually be referring to the king. So in other words, you could argue, in other words, your average run-of-the-mill guy doesn't necessarily make a chaga on the day that he shaves his beard or on the day that he came safely out of the ocean or whatever. But then he says maybe not necessarily. You're not going to necessarily. So therefore, in other words, the point is, so you're not going to say, let's say that the whole kingdom is going to make a celebration on the day that the king shaves his beard. So it would mean, in other words, that then you only have those who are celebrating. It would be also to do business with them, but not everybody else. So the first two we had in the Gemara are the first two we had in the Mishnah are Kalenda and Skarnura. So let's define those. Amar of Chonin bar Rava, Kalenda ches yomim after Tkufa. Kalenda takes place 8 days after Tkufas Tevis. So they would make an 8-day holiday. That Kalenda is which related to the English word calendar. The Romans called the beginning of every month of theirs the calends, but primarily when we talk about Kalenda over here, we mean the calends of January 1st, which Adayim Azeh is the Goyish New Year. So, and that was 8 days after the Tkufa. Back then, Tkufas Tevis would fall on December 25th, and they'd have an 8-day Chaga beginning from then and ending January 1st. So, the end of Kalenda is the 8 days after the Tkufa. Staunura, the other one mentioned in the Mishnah, Ches Yomim Lifnei Tkufa. That takes place 8 days before the Tkufa. So that begins then December 17th. Staunura, there's a few different possibilities where the name comes from. One, the general explanation is that you have the name for it in English coming from directly from Latin, is Saturnalia, because it was a holiday in honor of Saturn. They considered, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, these are the shortest days of the year, so they considered, like, Saturn, which in their mythology had to do with death and destruction and things wearing out or whatever, so therefore they attributed those days to Saturn, and they would bring Korbanos and make it a Chaga, as the Gemara is going to go on to say soon. It actually goes back to Genesis of those goes all the way back to Adam Rishon by Ma'aseh Bereishis. Anyway, the Teferes Yisrael points out, because back then Saturn was actually worshipped, and therefore the Chacham didn't want to use the name, therefore they changed it to Staunura. You have different other Gersois in the Yerushalmi, and previously in the Gemara and Daf Vav, we had it was called Saturnia, so whatever, the Chacham changed it, and he says Staunura. Star means the side. Nura means fire. So it means at the time of the year when the fiery sun is on the side, it's low down in the sky because it's very close to the winter solstice. Okay. Anyway, so that's the order. Kalenda is 8 days after the Tkufa. Staunura is 8 days before the Tkufa. The Simonach, and as we learned previously on Daf Vav, the Simon say you don't mix up which is which. As the Pasuk says, Ocher v'kedem sartoni v'gamer, you created me back and front. So we see the same way as the Pasuk mentions the back before the front, the same way we have the Mishnah is mentioning Kalenda, which takes place later, before Staunura, which takes place earlier, even though Staunura is before the Tkufa and Kalenda is after it. Why Taka does the Mishnah list them out of order? Marsha points out, since the Gemara is going to tell soon that these were actually created, or the genesis of these holidays actually goes back to Adam Rishon, and he first made the celebration in honor of Hashem that later on became Kalenda, as the Gemara is going to explain, and then later on, the following year, he made the one that the Goyim now call Staunura, so therefore, so the Mishnah lists them in that order. So the Gemara says Tanur. Another explanation is related to that is that Poshet in the Goyish year, Kalenda comes first before the Kalenda comes on January 1st, and Staunura comes at the end of December, so therefore the Mishnah lists them in that order. Okay, so the Gemara says Tanur Abanan. What happened? Where did these holidays come from? Lefisha Ra Odomerishan Yemshim is Smayet Vaholach. Odomerishan saw that the days when it's coming towards the winter solstice are getting shorter and shorter from Tishrei onward. Omar, he thinks to himself, he doesn't know how these things work. Oyli, woe to me, Shema b'shvil shesarachti, maybe because I acted badly. Oylem choshuch badi, therefore the world is becoming darker for me, and therefore now the world is going to disappear. V'chozel v'toyu v'vayu, and the world is going to return to toyu v'vayu. V'zui misa shenichnasa alay min hashamayim, and maybe this is when Hashem said that when I eat from the Eitz Hadas, I'm going to die. Maybe this is what Hashem meant, that how am I going to die? That's because the days are going to become progressively shorter and shorter, and eventually there'll be no sunlight at all, and the whole world will be in the dark, and that'll be that. So he was very nervous about that. The Ritva actually wonders. I mean, come on, other magician wasn't smart enough
There are 12 wonders. I mean, other magician wasn't smart enough to realize how the path of the sun and whatever works. So, okay, so the ritual says, you know, in Meshivan Allah God. Listen, you know, you have a god just sometimes will say these kinds of unusual things. You can't necessarily you can't necessarily say that, you know, there's some deeper meaning behind it. It doesn't necessarily mean that Adam was so dumb as to not realize this kind of thing. And then Maharal says that no, the fact is, I mean, Adam Rishon was he and Chava were the only ones in the world, and the whole world depends on him. So he thought, therefore, that so it doesn't mean that he didn't know that the days get longer and shorter. He just thought that it means there's darkness in the world, and therefore it's eventually going to be completely dark because of his chet. So he was worrying about it. Omad v'yoshav shmoni yom v'tainis. So for 8 days straight he was fasting. For 8 days straight he was fasting. V'tainis of the tefillah. For 8 days straight he was fasting and davening to Hashem not to destroy the world because of him. Kivin shadrot kufas tevis from v'roy yom shemarich v'holich. Then came kufas tevis and he saw now the days are starting to get longer. Omar, he realized to himself, okay, minhogei shalolam hu, this is how Hashem made the world to work. The days are going to get longer and shorter, and it doesn't mean that there's a flaw in the world because of Mayim. There is a flaw in the world because of his avedus, but it's not the kind of thing where the world is going to be in greater and greater darkness because of what I did wrong. Holach v'osa shmoni yom tovim. So and he made 8 days of yom tov to correspond to the 8 days that he had fasted before that. So altogether we have 16. So altogether 16 days. L'shana ha'acheres, the following year. And again, of course, by this time he had long since realized that this is how it works. The days get longer and shorter. So now he has no reason to fast on those last eight days before the tukufa. So instead, asan la'elu la'elu yom tovim. So he made both sets of 8 days as days of Yom Tov, to praise Hashem for how he made the world and how Hashem runs the world. Now, who kovam l'shem shemayim? Other magician originally set up these holidays l'shem shemayim, because of course in his time there was no avodah zarah yet, and he knew perfectly well that Hashem made it all happen. The hem kvom l'shem avodah zarah, the goyim later on learned from him to keep these days, but they instead turned it into chagas in honor of the goyim. Why after 8 days in each one, the Maharal talks about, because it takes time to realize that the days are getting perceptibly longer and shorter, and therefore it took 8 days. And he explains also that 8 days is nature, 8 is beyond nature, and he sees, in other words, that the world is being run in this way. This is how it works, with the days getting longer and shorter by Hashem, who is higher than nature, and therefore 8 days and 8 days. So instead they turned it into chagas for avodah zarah. Where'd they get the names from? Rabbi Hanano brings from the Yerushalmi that the name calendar actually comes from a Greek phrase kalondio, which means beautiful day. Kalon, like in English calligraphy and other such words like that come from a Greek word meaning beautiful, and dio is like day. So he exclaimed, kalondio, beautiful day, that the days are so beautiful now that they're getting longer, and therefore so they turn that in the end into the name calendar. As far as Starnura, the Yerushalmi, he brings from the Yerushalmi, that Starnura actually comes from a different place. It comes from the word soine sina tmuna, a hidden hate. They hate they're vengeful and they're full of grudges, and that refers to Esav's relationship to Yaakov. So therefore they named Stanur after that, after the historic hatred and rivalry that Esav has always had for Yaakov. So now they made them into chagas for Getchkas. So the Gemara asks, now we know of course there's the two famous opinions when Hashem first created the world, in Tishrei or in Nisan, meaning in other words, Tishrei would mean Hashem began creating at the end of Elul and Adar was created on Rosh Hashanah. The other opinion would be Hashem began creating at the end of Adar and Adam was created on Aleph Nissen. So Bishleim Lamanda Amut Tishrei Nivra Olam. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says that the world was created in Tishrei, meaning that Adam was created on Aleph Tishrei, therefore we can understand what happened over here. Yom Zuti Chaza. He sees the days getting shorter and shorter because the Aleph Tishrei is around the time of is during the time of the year when the days are progressively getting shorter. Yom Arichi LaKatalei Chaza. He had never seen days getting longer, so that's why he was afraid that maybe now the days are getting shorter. shorter and shorter, and the light is going to disappear altogether. Elul mando amar b'nissan nivra olam, but Rabbi Yeshua says the world was created in Nissan. Pachodela yom ezutav yom arisi. Didn't he already see that the days are getting longer from Nissan to Tammuz, and then they're getting shorter from Tammuz onward? Why didn't he realize already then that that's how Hashem created the world and that there's nothing wrong with it? And the answer is, to have a yom, to have a zutik, kol ha'ay lechaza, fine, but he never saw such short days as you have around Tikufas Tevis, and therefore now he was really worried that the world is going to be destroyed until he realized that the days are getting longer, so Marashot teaches out when he saw, so according to that opinion, he saw from Tikufas Nissan, the days are getting longer and longer, so he thought maybe that's how it is, it's going to be ad ein kates, it's going to be infinitely longer and longer. Then he sees it's starting to get shorter, okay, then maybe it's going to become completely dark, and maybe Hashem, maybe in other words, Marashot says, that Odom might have thought, you know what, Hashem wanted to show me, look what you could have had more and more bright light, and instead you messed up, and therefore now from Tikufas Tammuz and on, it's becoming shorter and shorter, and now it's coming, it's really short, and he's afraid it's going to continue like that forever, and the whole world is going to be plunged into darkness, and therefore, when not, then he celebrated. Okay. In a similar vein, the Gemara says there was a similar kind of thing as far as Adam's first experience of light and darkness, of day and night. The day that Adam was created, the first time the sun set. Imagine you had never seen a sunset before. Imagine how terrifying it would be. Omar, he thinks to himself the same thing. Early, woe to me, b'shvil shesarachti, because I acted badly and did the chetei tadas. Olam choshuch badi, now the world is dark because of me. V'yachsel olam l'toyu v'voyu, and the whole world is going to return to toyu v'voyu. And this is how Hashem has decided to punish me, that the world is going to end up in complete darkness. So he was sitting and fasting that entire, and then crying that entire night. And Chava is sitting opposite him, crying also. Again, you know, imagine we experience all of this from the first day we're born. Imagine somebody who never experienced it before. It must have been terrifying. You find, by the way, in a more positive way, you find, for example, Avram Avinu, who grew up in a cave his first couple of years because Nimrod wanted to kill him, and therefore when he first came out and he sees how the sun and moon and everything are operating, then that started him thinking, and that caused him to discover Hashem. So sometimes a person had no experience of this before. It's a whole different kind of thing. That a whole different kind of feeling than when you've experienced it day by day. Anyway, by the way, it mentions in the Medrash that, now we know Adam and Chava, of course, were created on Friday. There's a Medrash that says that Friday night, the sun Bechlal did not set. So therefore, they had 36 hours of straight light Friday night, and Shabbos day, and now only Matzah Shabbos is the sun first setting and it's becoming dark. It's brought that that's when, by the way, Hashem, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that Matzah Shabbos, when it was dark for the first time, Hashem gave Adam the intelligence to strike two stones together to produce fire, and that's why we say the Baruch Bar Ma'ara Eish on Matzah Shabbos in commemoration of that. And that, by the way, is why we only say it on Matzah Shabbos when, for example, for whatever reason you don't make Abdullah, on Matzah Shabbos, for example, when Tisha B'Av was on Sunday, then you tackle, you do or for that matter, when there's Yom Tov, you taka don't do Bodim Oda Eish because you don't do it any other night of the week. It's meant specifically to commemorate that discovery of fire by Adam Edition, that first dark month of Shabbos. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Kivin Sha'ola Omer HaShachar, when dawn broke, and then it's starting to become light, Omer, he realized, Min Hoga Shalom Hu, this is the normal way Hashem made the world to work, and there's nothing wrong with it. Omad Vehik, so now he was so grateful to Hashem. Omad Vehikriv, he went and brought a korban to Hashem. Sure, an ox, Shakaran of Kodman the Parasoisav, whose horns grew before its hooves. Namely, this is the original ox, or one of the original oxen, that was created in Sheshes and Egreshes. The Gemara tells us elsewhere that all of the animals were created fully formed, and they all emerged from the ground head first. So therefore, this ox was created by Hashem in the ground, just like all the other animals, and it emerged first its head with its horns on it, and then the rest of its body. So its hooves came before its horns, unlike a normal ox is born with hooves, and then it grows its horns only later on. So that was the ox that Adam brought as a korban. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, David asks Hashem, "V'sitav l'Hashem, may my tefillah be better to Hashem, more pleasing to Hashem, mishur
per, more than a shur par. A shur can be an animal even on the day it's born. Shur de kesev ha'es ki yivaled. So we see that an animal even on the day it's born, the ox on the day it's born, is already called a shur. Par suggests that it's a couple of years older, in its third year. So therefore, so it means shur par means a shur that was already created as a par, as a full-grown animal with its horns. So therefore, so David Makrin Makris, that has horn, that has hooves and horns. So therefore, so in other words, so David is asking, my tefillah may be more pleasing to Hashem even than that very first korban in history that Adam Rishon brought. That was the korban that Adam brought in gratitude that Hashem understands now how the world works. By the way, as far as the earlier thing about the length of the days and how he thought the days are getting shorter and shorter and it might disappear altogether. So there's a couple of other interesting explanations of it. Right? Like we said before, the Ritzvah says that the Ein Meshiv and Ba'agada, he says maybe because of the Chetei Tadas, he couldn't think logically. We said what the Maharal says, there's a couple of others. The Rif on Ein Yaakov says, listen, you know, sleep is 1/60th of death. So if Hashem is giving more time to sleep, then maybe it means eventually there's going to be more and more and the whole world is going to be dead. And then there's Rabbi Yonasan Ivershitz brings, that actually brings from the Arizal that Gan Eden is on the equator. So therefore, the day and night are always equal. Then he was kicked out of Gan Eden, and he ends up in Eretz Yisrael, and the areas around that. And there you have those seasons, and the days get longer and shorter. So he thought that maybe Hashem will continue to banish him to further and further dark places, even like to the poles or something. And therefore, so he saw that his days are getting longer, and he's not told to move. Then that's what he's celebrating about. So the same thing over here. When the days are getting longer, then he realized this is how Hashem runs the world, and therefore he brought a korban, and therefore he brought with the horn, the animal that grew its horns before its hooves. The symbolism of it, the Maharal explains, the hooves are the lowest, so to speak, the least important animal of the part. The horns are the most important part. So therefore that represents the highest quality, it's the highest quality animal, and the most connected to Elikus, and therefore that's the one that Adam Rishon brought as his korban, because he himself is the chosen of all creatures. So the Gemara goes on. The Amr of Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, Shor Shehikrav, Adam Rishon, this ox that Adam brought as a korban, Keren Achas Hoysalei B'Mitzchai. It had only one horn on its forehead, where most oxen have two. One point is it represents the Achdus of Hashem, particularly. Therefore, Shenema v'sitav l'Hashem mishor pram makrin mafris. The same pasuk that we just quoted, that David asks, may my korban be more acceptable to Hashem than this korban that makrin mafris. So I'm going to ask, what do you mean? Makrin tauti mashma. The word makrin suggests that it has a normal amount of horns, which is two. So where are you getting from there that it had only one? And the answer is Omer of Nachman Yitzchok Mikeren. It's written in the pasuk without the yud, so we can read it as though it said Mikeren from a horn, and therefore it means that there was in fact, or that it was an animal that had only one horn. Or it can be still read as Makrin without the yud, but it means, in other words, without the yud, it's we're meant to understand that it means only one horn. So that's that. That's the story with Adam's discovery of day and night, and then of the lengths of the year. And then again, we had, as the Gemara said, he made celebrations in honor of Hashem, celebrating that Hashem created the world and runs it. And later on, his descendants, the Goyim, made them into chagas in honor of their geshtes. So now, getting back to that point, as far as their chagas, Omer Rav. So Rav says, the Gemara says on the side, it should be Boi Rav. Rav asks the question. Boi Rav Masna, rather. So Omar, Boi Rav Masna, Rav Masna said or asked the following question. Rumi Sha'osa Kalenda, what if in Rome they're celebrating this calendar holiday? V'chol ha'yoras ha'smuchas lo mishtabas lo. Now let's say there are nearby cities where they don't worship that particular, they don't worship those particular gods, so they don't actually celebrate on those days, but they're subject to Rome, and they have to pay taxes and things like that. So now the question is, Oisin Ayoras, Asuras, Oimotoras, would you be allowed to do business with the Goyim in those cities or not? On the one hand, they don't really celebrate this holiday. On the other hand, the fact is, since they're meshuvad to Rome, since they're going to have to, they have to pay taxes and provide supplies to Rome, then the concern is that they're going to, whatever they're going to buy from you now, they're going to bring to Rome, and they're going to, and in order that the Romans can bring them as korbanos. So what would be the din as far as that? So the Gemara says, "Rav Machlokas." Rav Yeshua ben Levi Amar Kalenda Asura Lakolhi. Rav Yeshua ben Levi says that Kalenda is also to do business with any goyim who have any kind of connection with that chogah, whether they actually celebrated on it or not. So therefore, according to him, yes, those cities near Rome would also be subject to that yin. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, Ein Asura, Elolayv Deir Bavad, it's only going to be also for those who actually worship the Getchkas, and therefore it won't apply to the nearby cities. This is how Rashi explains, in other words, that the nearby cities, they weren't actually celebrating Kalenda at all. They were just meshubad to Rome as far as selling them supplies and whatnot. The Ritva and other Rishonim learn that the Rashba and other Rishonim learn that actually, yeah, they do celebrate Kalenda, but they don't actually worship the Getchkas on it. So the question is, what would be the din? And the answer is, it's a Machlokas Rishonim. It's a Machlokas Amoraim. So as much as Tanya covers Tana covers Sage Rav Yochanan, we learn a brisa like the way Rav Yochanan said. After Pisha Omru Rumi off the calendar, even though Rome has declared a calendar holiday, and the nearby cities are subject to it, and they have to pay taxes and supplies and whatnot, he asks me, "Ein Asura Eloiv Deir Bovad." Then that nevertheless that chogah is only for those who worship it. So according to Rashi, again, the point is the other cities don't even celebrate it, so therefore there's no problem, and according to the Rashba, and the other Rishonim, it means they do celebrate it, but they don't worship on it, and therefore that would be fine. We're not worried about the fact that they're going to go and bring supplies to Rome. So that Brisa shows that, that Brisa supports Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. Okay? Now the Gemara continues with the continuation of the Brisa. Saturnalia. What about the Saturnalia that we meant, or Starnura, as we called it in the Mishnah? Ukratesim and Kratesim, which we're going to define on Omer Bey, is what that is. The Yom Gnusia Shomachayim, and the day of the Gnusia of their kings, which, as we said in the Mishnah, the Gemara is going to end up saying means the day that the king was crowned. The Yom Shahumlach Ben Melach, or the day that the king was appointed, and the Gemara is going to talk about later on Daf Yod. What do you mean? If Gnusia is the day he was appointed, then what's Yom Shahumlach Ben Melach? We'll talk about on Daf Yod and explain that when there's a hereditary king, etc. Anyway, so all those, the fun of Osir, so you're also to do business with the Goyim on the days before, La'achrav Mutter, but after it you would be allowed to, because as the Chachamim said against Rabbi Shmuel, you're allowed to always after the Chogah. And the Braita continues, like we said in our Mishnah, if a goy makes a party in honor of his son's wedding, and then he's going to be celebrating and thanking his getchkas there, ain't also ela oisayon v'oisayish bovad, then it's also only that day and that person to do business with him, but you'd be allowed to on the days before it, and there's no problem with any of the other goyim. Okay, so we see that Braisa, the first part of that Braisa, supports Rabbi Yochanan that when you have cities that themselves don't celebrate these chogas at all, or celebrate them and don't worship Avodah Zarah, then even though they're subject to cities that do, and they have to pay them taxes and provide them supplies and whatever, nevertheless you're allowed to do business with them. And the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Afanan Nami Tanena. Rav Ashi says, listen, you don't even need the Braisa. You have our Mishnah also says this point. Dukatoni, because on Mishnah I mentioned Yom Teglachas Konu of Lurisa, on the day when the goy shaves off his beard or his lock of hair, the Yom Shalabim in a Yam, or the day that he came safely out of the sea, the Yom Shiyotzebim Vesasurin, or a day, I think I forgot to mention that phrase in the Mishnah, but a day that he got out of jail, ain't also Ois Ela Oisa Yom Bovad Oisa Ish, then it's only also that day and that person. Now, why does the Mishnah need to say that? The Shlema Oisa Yom to say that only that day is also fine, La Pukim Lafon of Alachrov. That means, in other words, because otherwise you shouldn't think that maybe for 3 days before, or according to Bishmal, the days after, it should be also, no, it's only also that one day that he's celebrating. Ela Oisa Ish, but, says Rav Ashi, the fact that it mentions that particular person, La Pukimai, well, who else? Why would we think? Because Joe is celebrating in honor of his Getchka, because he got safely out of the ocean. Is that a reason we should be also to do business with Tom? What does Tom have anything to do with Joe? Lav la poser la pokimai, lav la pokim meshubodav. It must mean, for example, when Tom is meshubod to Joe and has to give and has to provide him supplies and whatnot, and therefore you think since Joe, you're also to allow to do business with on that day because he's celebrating in honor of his getchka, maybe also Tom. So therefore, Kamashim, therefore, Shmami, so therefore, the Mishnah has to tell us, no, only Oyster Ish, only Joe is also, Tom would be Mutter. So good, Shmami, now that proves Rav Yechanan's point, that the same thing, on the city level, that when you have a city that is Meshubad to Rome, and they themselves don't celebrate the Chog at all, or they celebrate, but they don't worship Getchkes, then yes, you are allowed to do business with them, and we're not concerned about the fact that they're supplying things to Rome. Talking about this topic of a goy making a wedding, so the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yisrael, shebechutz la'aretz, ovdavetz kochavim b'tarahein. Jews who live in chutz la'aretz and mix among the goyim are, in effect, worshipping Avodah Zarah in a tohodika way. They don't realize that they're getting involved in Avodah Zarah. They have pure hearts. They think that they're doing the right thing, but they're not. They're actually doing something, Rabbi Shmuel points out, which really is also, and they don't realize. Ketzad, what are they doing? A goy makes a party in honor of his son's wedding, and he invites all the Jews in town. Even though the Jews are eating and drinking their own food, they brought kosher food, or they brought kosher food. They even have their own waiters. And they even have their own waiters serving them, so that all they're doing is they're at the party. Nevertheless, says Rabbi Shmuel, the Pasuk considers it as though they ate from sacrifices to the dead Getchkes, because the fact is, this party, they're going to be worshipping their Getchkes and thanking their Getchkes at it, and they're new Jews are by that party. Al derech we have at the Hashveirish's party. So therefore, in other words, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that the Jews are not allowed to do that. They don't realize they're doing the Tara, so therefore you shouldn't be eating there in the first place. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, v'kara l'cha, the goy is going to invite you, v'ochalta mizivcha, and you're going to eat from his sacrifices. So in other words, when you eat from his sacrifices, it's considered like you're being moida in his getchka. So therefore, so his party, so you know, you're not allowed to. Rabbeinu Yonah does say that if to begin with you tell them we're going to be bringing our own food, then maybe there wouldn't be an issue in it. In other words, the problem would be, in other words, Rabbeinu Yonah apparently learns, the problem would be if you accept the invitation and the goy thinks, oh good, then the Jew is going to eat whatever food I provide. And then later on, the Jew brings his kosher food. That's a problem because it still means at one point you made it sound like you agree with the validity of his getchka. But in other words, if you told him to begin with, then it wouldn't be an issue. We'll talk about in a minute what the actual halachas are in this connection. Okay, so if he eats from the goy's food, then yeah, that's a problem. Never mind kashrus, but fine, you can say it's zivchei mesim. But why shouldn't it be allowed that the Jew is bringing his own food? Amar Rava, im kein neima krova halta mizivchei. Because then why does the pasuk have to mention that he invites you? The pasuk could just say that you eat from his korban. My vakora, mshas kriya, from when he invites you and you accept the invitation, then already there's a problem. So the Gemara says, here's the halachas in that regard, and then we'll talk in a minute what the posts can talk about, what the actual practical halachas that come out from this. So therefore the Gemara says, here's the deal. Kol tlos in yoimin, anytime 30 days after the wedding, Bein Omele Machnas Hilula, whether the goy says I'm inviting you to a post wedding party in honor of my son's wedding, that was a couple of weeks ago, Bein Loy Omele Machnas Hilula, or whether he doesn't tell him specifically that it has to do with the wedding, either way, within 30 days after it, we assume that it's a post wedding thing. And therefore, so it would be also for the Yid to accept the invitation. Because again, even if he's not going to bring korbanos, he's still going to go thank his getchka that the yid accepted his invitation. Mikan va'elach, after 30 days, then it depends. E omole machnas hilula, if the goy tells him this is also something for after the wedding, also then it would still be also for the same reason. The e omole machnas hilula, after 30 days, if he doesn't say that it has to do with the wedding, shorty, then it would be fine. Because then we don't assume that he has the wedding on his mind anymore and his getchkas and thanking them and so forth. So the Gemara says, okay, but if he tells him it's because of the wedding, how long does the Isser extend? What are you going to say? If he tells him 5 years from now, you know, my son got married 5 years ago, I'm making a party, would that be a reason to be also to accept the invitation? So no, I'm going to pop out trace to Yachid Shata only until 12 months have passed. All right. So because sometimes within 12 months afterwards, they still make sudas as post-wedding things. The pashtus, I guess the Gemara is not bothered by, it might be an anniversary or dinner. Apparently the Gemara is not bothered by that. Okay. What about Ikra Me'emas also? What about before the wedding? From when does it become also to accept his invitation? So the answer is Omar Papa Mishmei Derava Miki Romu Sairi Basinti. From when they put barley into the barrels, into the vats, where they're going to be using it to make beer for the wedding. So Asinti, Rashi translates as Adrevas, as troughs, where they soak the barley, which is the first step in making the beer. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation, so at that point, you're already beginning the preparations for the wedding, and therefore, so now it would be also for the Yid to accept the Goy's invitation. So Rashi brings a second explanation. What they would do is they would take troughs, and they would take kalim and put dirt in them, and then plant barley seeds in there, and then where the plants would start growing, and they would bring them in front of the chosin and kala as like a simon for good. Like, you should have children, you should grow and multiply like the way these seeds are multiplying and growing. So that's also, it's the first preparations for the wedding, so therefore at that point, then you're not allowed to accept the goy's invitation. Tosfos points out that there's reason to prefer Rashi's second explanation. Fine. So the Gemara asks, the boss of Teresa Yachid Shata Shari. So you're telling me if it's after 12 months, then even if the Goy says it has to do with the wedding, then it would be mutter to accept the invitation. Why? Rabbi Yitzchok Breder Mesharshia one time visited the house of a certain Goy, the boss of Teresa Yachid Shata, and it was more than 12 months after the Goy or his son or whatever had gotten married. The Shamid Oide, and Rabbi Yitzchok is hearing the Goy thank his Getchke for the fact that Rabbi Yitzchok is joining him for the party. So Rabbi Yitzchok realized that this guy is still, even after 12 months, he still has that on his mind, and therefore Rabbi Yitzchok held himself back and didn't eat there. So the answer is Shiny Rabbi Yitzchok. The difference is that he was a choshuva person, and therefore so the Goy would be grateful that he accepted his invitation even after 12 months. Still, the fact that Rabbi Yitzchok Breder Mesharshia, such an important person, he accepted my invitation, even though I got married long more than 12 months ago, the Goy is still going to be thankful and thank his Genshka for that. But in a regular person, that kind of thing wouldn't apply. So you have, first of all, there's the question the Achronim talk about, what the reason is behind it. The Taz explains that all this is a problem of chaser. The Gemara had brought the pasuk before. The Korol HaChava, Chaltam Yizivchai. He's going to invite you and eat from his korban, and then the pasuk goes on to say that you're going to end up intermarrying with them, Rahman al-Islam. So therefore, so all of these rules are meant to avoid that. In which case, the Taz says that the Jerisha says maybe there's no heter for a Yid to attend where there's a problem of Eva, but no, it says the Taz, if it's a matter of chasnos, you say, you don't have any heterim like that. So, on the other hand, the Shach explains that no, the problem is not chasnos, it's lo yishama al picha, that as we learned a few dafim ago, you don't want that the Goy should be thanking his Getchke because of you. So when you come to his party, he's going to be happy and thank his Getchke. So therefore, it's not really have to do with chasnos, and therefore we can be matter it when there's a problem of Eva or other things like that. Okay, so the Moshe brings in a tshuva. He brings that he seems to say that the halacha is in fact that where there's a problem of Eva, it would be allowed. So in short, in other words, if let's say for him nowadays anyway, the goyim are not such oivdavidas on anyway. But the point is, in other words, let's say for example, imagine a shliach in India, and you know in India they definitely worship avodazara, no question about that. So imagine for example a shliach is invited to a wedding of the Indian prime minister's son or daughter or whatever. There may be reason to be mocked to him to go. Because of Eva, and again, as Rabbeinu Yonah says, maybe also, if to begin with, the Yid tells him, listen, I'm not going to be eating your food anyway, I have to bring my own food, then there may not be an issue anyhow. Okay. Fine. Next, the Mishnah had said, Ukratesim, the next chaga that the Mishnah had mentioned, that you're not allowed to do business with the Goyim, is Kratesim. So my Kratesim, what does that holiday celebrate? Where does the word b'chlal come from? Tosfos brings it. Rabbeinu Shmaya said that in Greek, the word kratesim means to grab. It means a double grab. So in other words, it's the second time, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that the Romans grabbed world power, world domination. So there was an original time when they had been powerful, and then there was a second time when they gained full power and became a world empire. Different other possibilities. Rabbeinu Hananel says that just kratesim is from a word that means rulership. So it means, in other words, it's the day when they became rulers of the known world, basically. So, my kratesim, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Yom Shetofsaba Romi Malchus. The day on which the Romans grabbed kingship, and in other words, when they defeated the last of the Greeks, the last of the Greek and Hellenistic kingdoms, and became the superpower there. So the Gemara says, "Valtanya kratesim v'yem shetofsa by Romi malchus." A brisa lists them separately, kratesim, and the day that the Romans grabbed, seized power. So then those are two different things. The answer is Amar Rabbi Yosef, shtei tfisas tofsa Romi. The answer is they actually grabbed power twice. There were two different stages in them getting soul power. So that's as Tosfos says. Again, according to Rabbeinu Shmaya, kratesim actually comes from words that means grab twice. Because in other words, they're celebrating the second grab, the second to the time when they became the ultimate power. But there was a first time before that as well, and that's what the Braita means when it distinguishes between kratesim and Yom Shetofsaba Romi Malchus. The Aruch HaSholem points out the word kratesim, really kratesis, he says, specifically the Samach, comes from a Greek word meaning rulership. So again, it means when they gain sole power and rulership over their empire. So there were two times, says Rabbi Yosef. Achas we make clafter of Malchus, one in the times of Queen Cleopatra, the famous Queen Cleopatra, where the Romans defeated her, and then that was the last of the Greek kingdoms. But Achas Shetofsa we make Yevonim, and then previously where they had conquered the other Greek kingdoms. So there were two stages, and therefore there were two different chagas. So the Mishnah is focusing on one of them, but the Braita mentions there was another one as well. Okay. So what happened? How do we see that the Romans took power from the Greeks? The Kiosid of Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he told the history of what happened. Tlosin a train krubi of the Raimoi Bahadi Yivanoi. The Romans fought 32 wars against the Greeks, and they weren't able to defeat them. Ad Shatfinu, the Yisrael Ba'adayu, until the Romans made a pact with the Jews and that they were going to fight together against the Greeks. So you have to consider, at the time when the Hashmonaim are fighting against, this is in the period when the Hashmonaim are fighting against the Greeks in Syria and eventually the Romans are fighting against them in other places as well. So the deal is that they're going to have the Jews on their side and together we're going to defeat and overthrow these various Greek kingdoms. So, v'hochi asnu ba'adayu, they made the following deal between the Romans and the Jews. Iminan malchi, if there's a point in, at one point, we Romans will provide the kings, minayu hui parchi, then you Jews are going to be the governors of the individual provinces. The iminayu malchi, and if the other way around, at times, when you Jews will provide the kings, minan hi parchi, then we will provide the governors. So we're going to have a power-sharing arrangement, basically. You find something similar with Paras and Madai, the Gemara mentions in Megillah, the same kind of thing. Paras and Madai were originally two different kingdoms that federated together, and they made the same kind of deal. We know, of course, especially with Yaakov and Esav, both of them can't be great at the same time, so therefore they also realize that they have to do like that. Marshall discusses in some detail over here the Romans, but where they even get power of their own. Their power depends on the schus or the lack of schus of the Jewish people, as we find that Yitzchak had said, to Esav, v'hoyah kasher torid, and other such things. So now, therefore, they had to join together with the Jewish people, and depending on the Jewish people's schus and choiva, then one of us will be up and the other one will be down. So what happened? So now the Romans sent the following message to the Greeks who they're fighting against. They said, "Ad ha'idna avidna b'krova. Up until now, we've been trying to settle this through fighting, and we're not getting anywhere. Hashta never bedina. So now let's go and do a logical thing. Let's bring things to the international court, so to speak, and they can decide which of us has the right." So the discussion went as follows. Margolis the Eben Toiva. Suppose a person has a margolis, a pearl, and an Eben Toiva, a precious stone. Which one, if he wants to make them into a piece of jewelry or something, which one is it appropriate should be used as the base for the other one? So the Greeks sent them back. Now, Golos le'Evan Torah. The pearl is less precious, and therefore it should be the basis for the Evan Torah. Okay, continue the Romans. Evan Torah, the Enoch. What about if you have a precious stone and an Enoch, which is an onyx, which is a particular kind of precious stone? So then also Ezeman, you also bosses Lachaveri. Which one is the base and which one is the primary thing? And the Greeks answered, Evan Torah, the Enoch, the precious stone will be the base for the Enoch. The Enoch is more important. The next question, Enoch for Sefer Torah, Ezeman, you also bosses Lachaveri. What about when there's an Enoch and a Sefer Torah? And the Greeks were smart enough to realize maybe it means the actual physical Greeks, maybe it means the Malachim in Shemayim, whatever it is, so the answer is Enoch or Sefer Torah, the answer is the Enoch should be the base for the Sefer Torah. Shocholahu, so the Roman, after all, the Greeks did respect the concept of the Torah, just as we know, Lashkicham Torah Secha, they wanted to make that it's not Hashem's Torah, that it's just a human creation, Rahman al-Islam, but still they recognize the importance of the Torah. So they realize that's even more important than any precious stone. Shocholahu, so the Roman said, aha, then we got you. Imkain, Anan, Sefer Torah Gabon, well, then now we're allied with the Jews, so we have the Sefer Torah with us, we have the Jews together with us, and therefore you're going to have to, based on what you yourselves agreed to, then you're going to have to be subject to us. Sure enough, Kofulahu, they were able to force the Greeks to be meshuvah to them. So now that was the first time then we're saying when Rome grabbed tremendous power, and then we're saying in addition there was one more thing in the times of Klaftera and the times of Cleopatra. So what happened? Esther v'shis shnin komalahu behemun sayo b'hadi Yisrael. For 26 years, the Romans kept their deal with the Jewish people, and they agreed to treat them as equals. Mikan ve'elach ishtabdu b'hu. After that, they started subjugating and dominating over the Jewish people and saying we're the bosses. So the Gemara says, "Me'ikru my dorush, or says my dorush." What were the Romans thinking to begin with that they need to ally with the Jewish people, and therefore they have to respect their agreement? And what made them decide later on that we don't need that, and we can be sole power and elbow the Jewish people out? So the Gemara says, "Me'ikru dorush." Originally, they darushin, and again, are the Romans literally reading the psukim? In other words, we're talking about that subconsciously, or it means that they're malachim, or it means fact that they're wise men knew already what it says in the Torah, and they could figure these things out. So Me'ikud Dorush, Yaakov says to Esav, Esav says to Yaakov, Nisa, travel, v'nei leicha, and let's go, v'elchol anagdecha, and I will walk equal to you. In other words, so we'll go together as equals, Esav offers to Yaakov. So therefore, so the Romans who are descended from Esav realize, therefore, we have to be equals with Yaakov. Ma'isa of a similar bottom. Well, the Seif Dorush, later on they realize, Yaakov replied, Yavor na'adoni, lifnei avdoi, let my master go on ahead in front of his servant, as that's usually how it is. The sire, the nobleman, usually goes in front of his servant. So therefore, so they realize, in other words, that the Jews are not going to have malchus now. Their malchus is going to be l'osid lovi. Right now, it's going to be needed. Right now, it's going to be yavo nadoni. Right now, the Romans are going to have power, and the Jewish people will have power l'osid lovi in Yemos HaMashiach. So Marsha actually points out, it doesn't mean, so Taka, how do you reconcile the two psukim? Well, that's the point. In other words, it depends on the schusim of the Jewish people respectively. So Yaakov had seen that if they're equal, even if they try to be equal, it's not going to work out that way. Inevitably, one of them is going to be more powerful than the other. And the fact is, Rav Yavid Sir, the elder is going to serve the younger. But what does that mean? Who's considered the elder? Who's the younger? After all, Yaakov was the younger, but he brought the Bechorah, etc. So therefore, in other words, the fact is, there's going to have to be, one of them is going to have to be on top. And since only the Olam Hashiyim, Baharitzi, and only in the future will we go Lishpet Eshar Esav, then therefore the Romans now are going to have the power, and they realize that. And therefore, they took advantage of that and started subjugating the Jewish people. I believe Yitzchak has a very interesting explanation of this whole piece of Gemara about what's going on over here with the 32 battles and the three types of precious stones and so forth. The Kitzur, he explains, the Greeks, we know, were very great in all the various sciences and philosophies and whatnot. So he explains that the pearl, which in Margolis, Meloshin Regel, refers to the sciences of things that are here on earth. The Even Tova, which is bright and shiny, refers to astronomy, like the study of the shining heavenly bodies. And the Enoch represents metaphysics, represents the questions about Ruchnius and questions about philosophy and ethics and all those kinds of things. So each one of them is a basis for the next one. And then the Romans say, yes, but the Torah is more important than all of those. The Torah outranks all of those, and therefore each of those has to give sway to that. And he explains the 32 battles. He explains 32 has to do with Malchus, and we're saying that Rome eventually got the Sol Malchus, and it has to do with the battles that they fought, and so on and so forth. And he has a whole explanation. He ends up saying, actually, the name that he actually says, see, that you have the double 32 over here. First they have 32 battles, then you have the Torah, begins with a Beis and ends with a Lamed, which is also Gematria 32. So therefore, it's in effect, you have 32 battles, and then you have a Torah that decides the issue, which is also 32, and in token of that, Rav Dimi's name adds up, Gematria, to 64, representing Rav Dimi as the one to tell us about those two 32s, the 32 battles, and the power of the 32 in the Torah. And he explains also, he talks about also why that's the 26. And we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. The Gemara is going to show how we can show chronologically about those 26 years.
Yes, Shekayach.